With that, welcome friends to Tanked Up, the podcast about video games and beer. I'm one of your hosts, Ben, here with Adam.
Hey!
And Lucy.
Hi.
Hey, hey, hey. Let's open up some beers. Lucy, why don't you kick us off?
Yes, please. I'm going to drink a beer from a brewery that I only just found out about this week.
Okay.
Carl's.
Local. Yes. They're local, so it's not Carlsberg. They're from Worcestershire, Kidderminster specifically, and they're called Copper Beach Brewing Company. I actually did some prep for this podcast because I was just reading about them. Started off small in their back garden with like a little, you know, brew kit. Mm-hmm. Under a Copper Beach tree, and that's why it's called Copper Beach Brewing Company. Fair. But yeah, they've moved on over to a site in Kidderminster. This one that I'm drinking, I picked up a few of them, but this particular one is a 4.6% pale ale called Birdie.
Birdie.
Nice little birdie on the can. Good. Ooh, it has a QR code. What's in a name? Wonder if this tells us about the beer or the brewery. Let me quickly scan that.
It would just take you straight to their environmental carbon neutral page, probably.
Yeah,
a lot of them do these days. It takes to their sustainable kind of mission page and stuff.
Not far off. Oh, okay. Talks about their naming conventions, but it actually tells you in about Birdie specifically.
Nice, good.
Okay, it's something about. It doesn't matter. I was expecting like flavor text and stuff like that. So it's just about the name of it. So it's a pale ale. I'll tell everybody about.
Cool.
What it tastes like.
Adam, what are you drinking?
I stopped by the Hop Knocker to do some work and sip a tiny beer, but right when I got there, Ben was cracked one of Yonder's new ice cream series. Ooh. The three ice cream flavored beers, and one of them is vegan free. So the one he was doing was the bubblegum flavored, and it was full of
vegan
lactose
free.
And very blue. Sorry, vegan free.
No vegans in this one, absolutely.
Yeah. Vegan friendly is the term, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is a vegan friendly ice cream sour from Yonder. It's passion fruit, nectarine, dairy free ice cream sour. Barley, wheat, oats, passion fruit, peach, apricot, and what, vanilla. 5%, 2.2 units. And it's just. You know what? I kind of like that it's just called passion fruit and nectarine sorbet, dairy fruit sorbet sour. No, like weird other things.
Just
like
need.
Yeah.
Has that not been knocking around for a while now? That one.
It might have been. It just might have been. It might have been that they made another flavor and Ben just brought the run in.
Yeah.
I haven't really been paying attention, but I haven't seen them. So.
Just because the ice cream cone thing, I know I've seen.
And you've
that
seen
before,
this, like.
I
was going to say the art is great. It's such a. So it's such a quintessential cartoon ice cream cone, but also. It's like a little smiling face that's melting. It's like the happiest an ice cream can be because after that, its face melts off. It's such a like unique. This is the only moment it could possibly be happy because the mouth is like just above where everything's melting.
And everything else goes wrong. Yep,
yeah,
absolutely.
That's the piece before the existential dread. Yeah.
Yes.
We're talking about
things going wrong and existential dread. I'm drinking a beer called Neutron Star. But this is another beer from Atom. It's the last beer I've got from my Atom order. That is the can art. You can't see. There's lots of concentric circles and stuff all around. It's just
a dot
on there.
Which is what we are.
But this is a coffee and vanilla imperial stout. It's 12%. As with the other Atom beers, the flavour text is more about what a neutron star is to start with. The result of a supernova explosion, neutron stars are the densest stars known to exist. And then it says a rich and complex imperial stout aged on Madagascan bourbon vanilla and freshly roasted Costa Rican coffee beans.
Wow.
So yeah, right up my street.
Very island sourced.
Yes, I suppose it is. And brewed on an island as well. Mm. So, you know, yeah. Lucy, let's come back. Let's come back to the Copper Beach Tree. No, just Copper Beach just Brewing Copper, Company.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really impressed by the look of it. It's like that head is not going anywhere.
Mm.
It's like really fluffy, pillowy. About two finger, one and a half finger, white head. Ooh, a lot of yeast down there. Yeah, it's pretty orange looking. But yeah, it's a good looking beer so far.
Nice. So a bit of sediment at the bottom.
Mm. A lot floating down there. Mm. That's really easy and soft. Yeah, quite a smooth body to it.
Mm.
But also a nice little bit of carbonation. Just making it, you know, not flat. Actually tasting like a beer. It's got a decent amount of bitterness at the end, actually.
That's what we like.
Yeah, definitely. You don't usually get that anymore. A lot of it is just like tropical fruity sweetness on the end. This actually has, I guess, slight bit of fruit. But it's not the like very, you know, what we've come accustomed to, like with pale ales and IPAs now, where it's just like, yeah, you're getting massive amounts of tropical fruit. And this is much more understated in that sense, but
okay,
still has that citrusy, you know, fruitiness on it. It's just a lot more timid and mild compared to what I'm used to, which actually makes for a refreshing change for once, because it seems more that they've leaned into the bitterness more, which we don't usually get, whereas I'm like, you know, it's nice to have that balance, have that bitterness at the end, and this certainly does that.
Good. We do like it. I mean, yeah, as you say, you rarely get it in the pale space. Mm-hmm. You have that decent heft of bitterness on it, so that's good.
Yeah.
Is it more of a traditional kind of brewery? Is it sort of pales and bitters and golden ales and stuff like that?
I think when I was reading this, like there were like traditional beers made with like modern techniques and stuff like that. So probably have to see a bit more of their range from what I can remember, because I only think I picked up two beers from them. I think the other one was a Belgian wit that I picked up, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, you could tell me this is a Belgian wit by the looks of it, you know. Still really impressed by the look of it, and the fact that head is just retaining all the way down. It's barely, well, it's gotten light, a little bit smaller, but it's just still there. But this is a good beer. I think the body, it's got a decent amount of body for a 4.6% beer, because without that, like, you know, massive bit of fruitiness and in there, it could have maybe felt a little flat and a bit thin, but this has a decent amount of body in it.
Good.
That it just makes it, still quite fulfilling and, yeah, full. So, very good.
Perfect.
Very good.
Nice. Good. Adel. No? Did I go next? Who knows? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. No, Adel, you went next. The Yonder.
Yeah.
I've written them down in the wrong order, that's
all. Oh, I see. So, on the pour, I got a lot more of the sour, so I got, like, quite almost tangy, tarty notes, just from pouring it, and while Lucy was talking, sort of, you know, a bit close to my face, because it was trying to get on camera. But closer up, I'm getting a lot more the passion root and the nectarine are actually really quite well blended, so you're getting that stone fruit, slightly sweeter stone fruit, with the tropical notes of the passion fruit. It's one of those things where I think the like initial crack of the can just gave a lot of the sour came out, but now that it's like poured with basically head right to the rim, and so in the couple minutes Lucy was talking and the minute I've been talking, it's almost all dissipated. So you know, they poured with like a half finger of head and now it's all gone, but it's got a nice ring around the glass. It's completely opaque, just with a light sort of orangey yellow color. And like I said, the nose is now settled to a really nice blend of the nectarine and passion fruit with a slightly tart finish. That's kind of what it tastes like. Mm, it's been actually a while since I've like literally gone from really paying attention to the nose and taking a sip, and my and it's like the same. It's a little deeper in all those notes, but it's like the what I said before is kind of what's going on. I shouldn't be surprised. The sorbet, so there's like a velvetiness. Oh, I think I didn't tell you. It's 5%. So there's a velvetiness that's kind of surprising, just because it feels a little thicker, which is usually by ABV. And again, I think what's really great about this is, you know, if we take a look at the tin, you've got like the idea that it's a double scoop.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Actually, the passion fruit and nectarine are coming in at the same time, and they're just really well blended. They're both like doing a thing, such that I can recognize those notes, but I could also just be like, this is the taste of the beer, because they're not like 1-2, they're not competing, they're not ebbing and flowing at different rates. It's like they're really in sync and enmeshed. But still clearly a passion fruit nectarine.
Nice. Good.
And again, it finishes with like exactly what you want with the sour, I think, which is like a tanginess, a bit of a tartiness that fades slowly. And so the finish is the passion fruit nectarine kind of have a really light level point into the finish. It's most of the core of the taste is this like blended flavor. And then you just get this like, yeah, it's a bit more tangy than I'm used to with a sour. But like a traditional sour finish, and I think the passion fruit's helping to make it feel tangy because it's just got that tropical sweetness. And it's nice, and it lingers for a bit. But I think it's a finish I like, but I don't like nearly as much as like the core taste. So even though it's got a long finish, it's not one of those beers where I'm going to like just wait until the finish goes away. I'm probably going to drink this at pace because I like the strength of the flavor. Like it's kind of like a, like yeah, you might taste the ice cream 30 seconds later, but what you want to do is like the ice cream cone. Yeah. Really good, easy to drink, and at 5%, you wouldn't be in trouble.
Nice, good. I might be in trouble on this one as it is 12%. Adversity is kind of what you're saying. I didn't get a huge amount when I cracked the can. Like, not a big nose from this on that initial sort of opening. And even here, not getting much. There's a little bit, but sticking my nose in, full of flavor. You know, it is right there. And getting a lot of vanilla on there, but also kind of a really dark kind of chocolate. And I don't know if it was maybe the combination of the vanilla just giving it a touch of the coffee coming through, maybe more a slightly dark chocolate on that nose. But also kind of maybe slightly more kind of like iced coffee as well. Something a little bit lighter. So not a huge, deep kind of coffee flavor. Something that's maybe more sort of chocolatey, a little bit lighter with that combination of vanilla. I mean, that body is lovely. It's really not thick, but it's a little viscous, you know. It's very medium body, but that just that bit of slickness, that bit of viscosity to it, just makes it that little bit kind of fuller, I suppose. And the flavour is really big. So you get a bit of the roasted kind of notes first. So a bit of kind of cold coffee, I suppose. And then the vanilla kind of sort of almost seeps in. You kind of know it's there, but it gets a little bit bigger as that flavour just develops. But the thing that's not off-putting, but the end of this, and the end comes quite quickly with it, you're getting a lot of kind of alcohol burn on this. And it moves into a bit of a bitterness with that alcohol burn, which tastes a bit like like you've made a normal coffee and you've just left it a little bit too long. And you've got that slight cold, slightly bitter taste to it. Like maybe you've burnt it as you've poured hot water into it and then you're drinking it that little bit cold as well. And the ending on this is a bit like that. So this starts off really nicely. You know, a lot of big roasted kind of coffee notes. That chocolate you're getting on the nose maybe isn't quite there in the flavour. And as I say, the vanilla kind of seeps in. There's that sweetness there, which kind of kicks in. But I think that combination of a bit of sweetness, a little bit of bitterness towards the end, and then it just cooling off and having a really quick finish on it, just leaves me a little bit like that, you know, like I kind of like, I want something just on the end, just to take it away from that kind of colder, bitter sort of finish to it.
Yeah.
As we've just said, we love a bitter finish, but it doesn't quite match up with everything else. And it's just a bit too, almost, I was going to use the word pallid, but it's not quite that. It's, you know, it's not as bad as that. Pallid seems like quite a bad element, but it's getting towards maybe something which is a bit, I don't know, not unpleasant, because it isn't, but it's just creeping that way a little bit. Especially with a strong start to it as well, that it just turns that little bit as you're getting that flavor through. And I think, again, maybe if it was a longer tail, maybe if it didn't finish so quickly, that might be a little bit more manageable. But yeah, I think the quick finish and that level of bitterness that you get with the alcohol burn on there just turns it a bit too much for me. I'm sipping it very quickly because I'm wanting to experience that initial, you know, that initial taste again.
Just needs a bit more balance on the end.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we've talked about Atom previously, as you mentioned, Lucy, when you had the beer a few weeks ago, one of my you know, favourite breweries from a few years ago. And I'm pretty sure that was because of a couple of Imperial Stouts I'd had from them, you know, very much at that end of the scale that I'd experienced from Atom. So this, and this beer was the one I'd kind of gone, when I went onto the website, it was the first one I put in my basket. I'm like, cool, where's all the big stouts? Here. Great, I'll have that one, thank you very much. So I'm a little disappointed. I think the other beers I've had from them, from the pack, especially the beer last week on the episode, and some of the other ones. I think I had a single hopped IPA the other night, and that was really good, like just really well balanced. It's maybe not up there with the better beers from Atom. We'll see how it goes as I drink more of it. My palate might become slightly acclimatized to it as we go through the episode. But I wanted to start off this week, and we have a slightly shorter episode than we've had over the last few weeks, which have sort of spanned closer to sort of an hour and a half and a little bit over. I wanted to start a little bit on some news, and it's, as news tends to be, it's bad news because of course
Roll 7
absolutely is. Fuck Take headline. 2 Interactive.
I was going to bring this up.
Roll 7 made two of my favourite games in 2022 in Rollerdrome and Olly Olly World. And they have been closed. It looks like they have been closed, and who was the other one? Intercept Games.
Yeah.
Which are part of Private Division. So Private Division picked up and acquired, I think, Roll 7 last year, maybe.
Last year.
And Private Division are part of Take 2 Interactive. Take 2 Interactive being probably one of the most... I haven't seen figures, but I'm going to throw it out there. Probably one of the most profitable game companies in the history of game companies, based on the amount of games. You know, they own GTA, Rockstar, making GTA 6. You know, the whole industry is almost teetering on the release of GTA 6 as a concept. You know, considering how the long tail of GTA 5 has had, how much money that game has just made.
They're not going to go under anytime soon.
Absolutely. So this seems a bit of a weird move, and I don't know, again, whether they are, as a lot of game companies are at the moment, you know, they picked up studios after COVID. Loads of money was being pumped into the gaming sector at that point. Loads of people were at home buying more games, and you know, 2020 as a year, and I would imagine 2021 as well, are kind of outliers in people buying and putting more money into their hobbies just across the board, not just in gaming, but anything that you could do at home during those years. And so there's this false sense, as we've talked about before, this false sense of kind of a boom in it that had a really short kind of tail on it, because things are back to normal. Things are pre-2020 kind of, you know, kind of sales numbers and the amount of money that people are making. But for such a huge company with lots of subsidiaries, lots of other, you know, publishers and management companies, and then development studios kind of within that, a team like Roll 7, who made two of 2022's most, I would assume, highly rated
definitely games. Critically acclaimed.
But again, I don't know figures, I don't know numbers, I don't know sales figures and all of those kinds of things, but a lot of tweets that I've seen, a lot of anecdotal evidence that I've seen, suggests that they were very successful on that side of things as well. But just, it seems no one is safe. Like, this is the kind of, you know, PlayStation restructured recently and got rid of a bunch of people. Microsoft have done it with the Blizzard acquisition, and then suddenly they're like, sorry, here, we've got to get rid of a bunch of people to kind of balance our books a little bit and make ourselves a bit more sustainable. It's happening all over the place. But one of the biggest fucking companies just being like, goodbye, is nuts. Yeah. Absolutely nuts.
Problem is, it's not about sustainability. It's about maintaining the facade of infinite growth, right?
Yeah.
Which is actually a very recent phenomenon in terms of, like, capitalism. It used to be the case, even a couple decades ago, right, that people would invest in firms that, like, were the lead of a market, because that they would continue to be the lead, and that meant that that stock held value. But between deregulation and the notion of dividends being what investors are looking for, and just this idea that somehow technology has unleashed the notion that finite isn't a thing. it's just, like, really changed the face of our society, globalized as it is, in a way that is kind of wild. Like, and I'm saying this because at the, oh God, the turn of phrase, which is accurate, but makes me feel like dust. What I was going to say is, because, you know, just after the turn of the century, I was studying to be an economist. And after the turn of the century sounds like a million years ago, and it kind of was. And that's why I feel old. But, like, you know, I learned these things before. And, like, obviously, the notion of the economy and the notion of the stock market should be separated, right? But, like, I learned all this stuff kind of before, or at least I paid much more attention, and even when I worked for an investment firm for 6 odd months, it was before this notion of companies existing like they could always find more market share. Not that they could divide the market share or conquer the, like, present market, but that even the present market itself would magically double.
Yeah. The pie chart isn't going to get any bigger. It's just
it's like, it's really strange, because at the core of, like, one of the problems we have is this, like, notion of, like, zero sum is sometimes not the right way of modeling the way the world works. And they've gone to, like, it's zero sum, but also if you're the winner, you win more than there exists. And so it becomes this, as long as in the short run you can convince people that you're the one who's winning, and thus you will continue to magically multiply, and then, like, and there's obviously no way anyone can prove that they're going to be that thing in the long run, because it's a complete, it's a facade, but that means no one's aiming for it. And so the most successful video game companies, especially because it's in tech, and tech is this weirdly untethered, people don't understand it, and so it's this weirdly, oh God, I'm going to start talking about my research, people don't get that, like, there's materiality to technology. And the virtual world is just a bunch of physical things on physical things. The zeros and ones aren't magically in the ether. The ethernet is just a coy term for actual physical bits on servers. that they haven't been virtualized, so it's even harder to point to the thing.
Mm.
But, like, it makes people think that we can just magically do things, and it's helping this untethered, like, thing. And so, of course, Take-Two, who, like, doesn't, in the old business models, doesn't need to fire a single fucking person, because we also plan, when we're making a bunch of money, to save some of it for the leaner years, especially if you're in a cyclical industry, like, I'm going to do a dev cycle where I'm not making any profits because the game has, I'm not making a game for a couple years.
Mm.
And then I make the game and I suddenly have a lot of profit. And it's not really profit because some of that is, I literally have assumed I will make such that I can then put into the next dev cycle. We'll have these years. Like, that's long, medium run planning. It's not rocket science. And it's the fact that a lot of these companies are making money hand over fist and still firing thousands of people tells you, like, something has gone wrong with the way people view the industry. And the problem is the people I'm talking about are the people who literally make the decisions that run the industry.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, clearly the people who know the least. It's always the way. Higher up you go, the less you know.
Yeah, the C-suite has a silent UNT.
Just like my company. Absolutely. People keep asking me questions. I'm like, I don't know.
What do we look like? A worker? No, I'm a. I'm a near the top.
It just. I suppose as a, you know, every company seems to be doing it at the moment, and
it's because they give license to each other, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the term, again, that Take-Two used, which all of these other companies have used as well, is streamline. It's to streamline our business. It's like, well, what the fuck does that mean? You just mean you're getting rid of some people. You have to. You want to, you know, you want to reduce your overheads by X percent, and that means people, essentially. And, you know, that will be a proportion of your workforce.
Yeah.
Streamlining never hits those top executives and their bonuses, hey?
No.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Funny that.
Yeah, especially when you see the number of people's salaries to bonus. Yeah. What drives me nuts is that, like, if you measure the C-suite's regular salary to average worker, you're going to get a lot of workers. And then these bonuses just make it, like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
I did mean to kind of go on a bit of an anti-capitalist structural rant, but...
Well, I mean this is the whole...
Please do. I'm in that vibe. I'm in that mood right now.
Completely. We live in a capitalist society. It's the structure of everything that kind of goes on, unfortunately.
I'm going to say something mildly infallible. Controversial. Like, there are versions of capitalism that aren't this. And that are more stable.
Sure.
And we had a taste of them a few decades ago. That's kind of why I said what it's like. In the past couple of decades, things have shifted to make it not in any way medium or long run viable. But also, I think there's this notion of, like, inevitability of this form of capitalism. And so much of it is based on not only, like, the stock market being the ideal clearinghouse of perfect markets, which it's not, and perfect markets don't exist. But also this idea that, like, well, we couldn't do otherwise, or, like, life is, like, it's like this notion of humans as perfect beings. It's like, no, we've evolved and to be in this environment, and we could have evolved with different adaptations to be in the same environment and still been the dominant species. In the same way, even if I accept that capitalism is, like, the way and not any version of socialism, there's flavors that still fit the structure of how we've made our world that aren't this insane.
No, like, cats don't have to pay for internet. Why can't we just do cats?
They just get it for free.
The problem is the cats always eat the mice, so you can't rely on them on the computer anyway.
But it is the insanity of the system, right? Because again, Intercept Games, who have made Kerbal Space Program 2, which is in early access, were making it, absolutely, which is in early access, which, no, it's not. It's not. Take-Two have said, we will continue updating this game.
Oh,
so has the game just, they've just transferred the development to another in-house company, or
oh, but that's even worse because the
potentially they'll probably feel really shit. You know, suddenly they're like, "You're now making this game." They're like, "Well, why? Why did you get rid of all these people? Now we've got to make this game." Anyway,
also, or, like, code isn't like that, especially complex games and things that are like what makes Kerbal, like, is Kerbal. The physics engine. Like, you can't just be like, "Well, you're a coder, so you'll immediately understand not only yeah. what
read this
what
and change it,
yeah, what this yeah. is, but yeah, also what where they were aiming for."
Hmm. Yeah, it's absurd.
People but it's, and ideas it, aren't cogs that are interchangeable.
But it's whether then, you know, we go more to a... And I've said this before about certain things, and we have seen it with a bit of the DEI kind of stupid fucking controversy. But going out to other companies, you know, subcontracting out to other companies for bits that you can't do. And whether that is, you know, taking Kerbal Space Program to another company who are just one of those kind of floating entities who basically just contract work on various bits, you know, doing ports or doing updates or, and those kinds of things. But it's the idea that, again, everything through the system that we have is passed down constantly. So the company that you use will charge VAT to the main company. The main company then have to charge VAT on top of the VAT to the next person. That person then has to charge their VAT on top of the VAT on top of the VAT on top of the VAT. So you're getting taxed VAT. Like so many times through something like this process. Especially when it comes to the end user, it's an insane system that actually you go, oh cool, this game's 20 quid. But that's got like the 20% VAT, or what, I don't know what it is on digital goods at the moment, but that's got 20% VAT within it. Mm-hmm. Cool. So you take £4 off. Perfect. That's the game is £16. That's £16 has got VAT built into it from any subcontracting company that they have had come in as well. Plus any subcontracting company that they have had come in as well. So it's potential you've got 4 or 5 layers of VAT on the top of this that actually the company only makes £5. You know, obviously it's proportionate because it's 20% of 20% of 20% as it goes down. But a company might make a very small amount on each of these games. And it makes it, the idea of not having people kind of in-house doing these kinds of things obviously starts to accelerate those costs that little bit more. So you would think these companies have brought people in, they brought developers in to make games for them as a smart business move. You know, bring things in-house, absolutely. You know, costs and those kinds of things. We make more money on this game cost us £20 to make, but we're giving £5 off to somebody else. Whereas it costs us £20 to make, we're just paying the cost was £4 because we haven't got that extra tax that we've had to cover to pay for these extra things, and all of that eats into everything else. It just seems that business and the system is so rigged against almost everybody, 99% of the people that are within the system, that it is, you know, this is just going to keep happening unless there is some kind of mass change. Absolutely, absolutely.
They all seem to know each other.
Who owns Take-Two these days? Someone like Dan Houser, probably, who just worked his way up through Rockstar or something like that. He's like, yes, I just make all the money now.
Like, what's that name always see? Is it like Zelnick or something like that? I can't remember.
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe
don't
that's know. The CEO. I don't know. One of those other mouthpieces that they shove in front of investors and shovel their crap down everybody's throat.
Well, and again, the idea that you'll have shareholders, investors, and all of those kinds of things, and you have to make money for them because you're a publicly traded company, and the whole idea that being a publicly traded company is that you have to make profit every year, and you have to increase that profit every year as well. An easy way to increase profit is to just get rid of a bunch of people who haven't got a product on the market at the moment, like Roll 7, you know, a couple of products released at the moment. They are you're plunging money into them. Suddenly you don't have to do that anymore because you've just got rid of all of them.
I'd like to think if I worked my way up into like one of those roles that I'd just make money for myself and then just start killing like every other like top brass person, like just like Robin Hood in it. You know, that's what I feel
you
that
might
I'd like
need
to
reread
do.
That tale. I don't think it was.
Came to the
become
pool.
One of the rich and kill the rest of them. It would steal from the rich.
That's my interpretation. That's my interpretation.
I suppose by robbing the rich,
he did become rich.
The plan isn't bad. I'm saying I just don't think it maps to Robin Hood. Minor point. Don't let that sully your projected angles.
It's a weird sort of system, right? And not to get too much into my business and things like that, but most of the people that work for us make more money than the three directors do, because they're doing 99% of the work and we're making money on top. Okay, there's lots of management and all those sorts of shit kind of things happening in the background of business, but they're the ones out there making the money. They're the fee earners in our business. I barely do any fee earning. Absolutely.
Not that you're not skilled, Ben. You very much are, but I'm just saying you want the skilled people. But
my role in my business has changed completely over the last year. I'm much more of a manager now, and you know, very client facing, bringing work in, but I manage teams now. I don't do very much drawing work at all. So I'm not a fee earner in that sense. I'm just managing a bunch of fee earners and skimming off the top, essentially, to manage those projects. Okay, those people wouldn't have a job with us if I didn't do that, but they could have a job with somebody else, potentially. Yeah. Who's making much more money off of the top of them than I potentially am? So it is a really weird position to be in, but it's one that you have to, and these companies will in no way have made this stance, but it's one you have to take an ethical stance in. You know, we're a sustainable construction and architectural company. We've got to be sustainable, firstly, in making money, but also in how you distribute that money as well. Because, again, you don't want to churn through people. I have people that work for me that are great, and I want to retain them. So paying them decent money is the thing to do.
Beautiful. Just a smart business decision, let alone an ethically correct one, given that they're human beings who are existing in a world where our economy's not doing great and there's a cost of living crisis.
Absolutely. This is where someone will listen to it and be like, right, he's just advocated that we can all have pay rises. Perfect.
No, you didn't say pay rises. You said, I'm not saying that at all. Be nice to them. Basically.
Yes, absolutely.
So if you cross at them, they can be like, I heard your podcast. You're not supposed to be cross at me.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you fucking ruined a project, you dink.
Yeah. Know their worth. Know their worth is a fucking brilliant term.
Yeah.
And I think it's one that just companies just don't give a shit, you know, ultimately. And it's one of those where if you're an independent game developer, you're an independent anything, and someone comes knocking, like, we want to acquire you, here, have £1 million, you know, okay, if you're, you know, two directors of a 15-20 person team, you think, oh mate, that's like a payday for us, perfect. You know, we'll take that, absolutely. But you have then no say over what happens to the rest of that company. You know, that 2 years later you're just shut and no one has a job anymore.
So even just like Reddit chasing the like AI dollars and going for an IPO after years of being not right. So weirdly, because of fiduciary duty, right? Like, once you become public, you actually can get like in legal trouble if you do not make decisions that optimize the shareholders.
Really?
Yeah, so fiduciary duty means that you are acting in the... So the shareholders are the people that you represent and you're supposed to act towards. And so it's a reasonable thing in the sense of if someone's investing in your company and you're making decisions that benefit you and aren't what like they wanted, they invested towards, that's like a roughshod notion of what it is. The problem is that's been corrupted in late-stage capitalism to be, we better give them dividends because otherwise we want more shareholders and want to keep them happy. But the problem is, even in the old version of the system, just by the nature of the duty, right, you can't decide to make the super artsy game that you know won't sell as well. Like literally, by becoming public, you've agreed that you have to follow what the shareholders want, right, or what's in their best interest. And if the shareholders are investing in you because they think you will make a profitable thing, then if there's evidence that you made a decision, like a fundamental decision to make a game that you, like you had, just really simple, like we can make this game, here's a core idea, there's one way which is like pretty standard and probably will sell millions of copy and has copies and has microtransactions, but has the same core idea. Or we could just do this really wild thing and it'd be really fruitful for all of us and it'd be really neat and might be like a noteworthy thing in video game history, but might just not be and might not sell well at all. You're not allowed choosing the right path.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You, by becoming a public company, you have blocked yourself from doing the more insane things. If we read the notion of the shareholders as their goals and their values being purely financial, which it doesn't necessarily have to be, which again is like these flavors of things. We don't know why people invest in things. And if the shareholders value, like you're an innovative company and they're trying to invest in you for the ability to innovate on a bigger level, then actually not picking the right path would be not going against what the shareholders want, but because everything's so abstracted away, there's no way you can tell why someone's investing in you. And the like base notion we just assume is people buy stocks as they want. They think stock will go up. Yeah. And so this is what I mean by it's been perverted, because that's not always why we buy stocks.
No.
We don't know. Like, or that's not always why people might invest in something. And now the stock market, which is what people think of as a way of making money, if that's the primary reason for the stock market, then under that lens, anytime someone buys a stock, it's because they think and trust that company will make more money. Then, and if I'm a public company, I think a fiduciary duty is to pick the left path.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get sued, but also I think that's what I'm supposed to do. But that's why you see a lot of these like small companies when they go public or get acquired, there's like a year and a half of things being the same and great, but then all that greatness like gets shuttered because it's not just like C-suite people saying, let's be bland and having no artistic integrity. It's like literally they've done the math and it'll probably sell well if it's blander. And they're legally obliged to, if we read fiduciary duty as purely profit motivated, they're legally obliged to make the bland thing.
It CD Projekt Red who got pulled up when Cyberpunk 2077 came out?
Yep.
And because of the, because it didn't sell.
Yep.
And they didn't make their
they
money.
Released a bad game.
They released a bad game and the heads of the studios got pulled in almost to have to beg for their jobs essentially. To shareholders and investors because they couldn't
justify
and there was the potential that they were going to be sued because they couldn't meet with their financial requirements of kind of what everyone was expecting from that game.
Ridiculous.
So they have been, you know, the investors and shareholders have been sold on this game.
Well, what sucks
like,
is
we're going to make X amount of money, and then when they didn't, they're like, well, you told us we gave you this money because you told us that it was going to make a bunch of money.
And what sucks about them is they were private for a long time.
Relationship. Yeah. It's a weird relationship, right?
So it's got to be a way of taking the money, taking the payday, and messing everything up.
Just run away.
In a sly way.
So CD Projekt Red went public in 2018. So their best game that was like a bit buggy but still loved at launch was Witcher 3. This was, 2016? Probably?
Maybe 15? Yeah, 15, yeah. 16.
So this is when they were private, and they could make decisions all by themselves without shareholder involvement, right? But in the development cycle of... So Cyberpunk had already started, but they went public in 2018, and of course, once they go public and they say, we're planning to publish this on year X, and they don't, that can go really wrong, and that's why they published their unfinished game. If they were still private, they could not have. So the CEO of Larian Studios, who made Baldur's Gate 3, he has said no one in the company wants to go public because they've figured, like, they've seen this. They understand the long-term harm that being a public company is. While I think in a sense, especially with like VCs and like investment, like, here, you're a tech firm, I'll just give you a bunch of money and then hopefully you'll somehow mint money, right? These capital our society is views a company like being bought out or encouraged to go public as winning, but actually even things like Facebook, right? If Facebook didn't ever go public, it probably would have been a thing with a chronological timeline of the people you fucking know. You know, the thing that you wanted to do and you got addicted to. Right?
Sure. But they've just had a big hit, haven't they?
Yeah.
Meta, as such, have just had a huge hit to their, you know, their market price and that sort of stuff. And it's the insanity of how the markets actually work, in that one person can say one thing, you know, like Elon Musk can say one thing, and suddenly all of the Tesla stocks just drop he said something fucking silly. And that happened a couple of times, and then people are like, oh no, he's going to continue doing silly things.
Yeah. And let's then they had to recall
just bet the entire company
all of the
on
cardboard him. Stainless steel trucks. Do you guys know about the recall of the Cybertruck?
Mm.
Do you know why it was recalled? Do you know?
A little bit.
Okay, so one, I'm going to look this up because I can't remember how many. What was great about the recall is this was supposed to be the big return of Tesla. This is like one of the landmark things. Mm-hmm. And it was less, it was under 4,000 vehicles were recalled, but also it was a recall that affected all Cybertrucks, which lets you know that they didn't even sell 4,000 trucks. Problem is that there was someone used the wrong type of like lubricant, or like might not have been a lubricant. It might have been like
WD-40.
Like welding something, right? But like they used the wrong
spray
wrong of a type, which means that there's a real danger that the throttle, like when you push the pedal, it will go all the way and stay all the way. So this recall is every single Cybertruck potentially will just be like rocket mode death trap. But also in because they have to, it's so dangerous, they have to say all of y'all, and the one of the lovely things with regulations is they had to say, and it affects this many vehicles, which was under 4,000. So it's like, oh, you sold none of these things. They're like not bulletproof or whatever. There are all these things, like all the stupid memes of people like, these are garbage, they're ugly, whatever. But also, they literally will kill you, but luckily only less than 4,000 idiots bought them. And it was like, oh yeah, Tesla's fucked, right?
Like, it's a weird prospect, right? The idea of I suppose the amalgam back to games is that it's a product. Right? It's a product that you put out into the market. We've just had, or last week I had an email from a company called Yoto. They make a small device that we've got. We bought one for Evelyn, and you basically put a card in the top and it reads you an audiobook. And they have, I got an email from them basically saying, in the US we have had, basically some of them have melted, like 10 of them have melted because the USB cable we've provided to charge them with has been faulty. So in the US they had to recall everything, whereas here they basically said, don't use the cable. We'll send you a new cable. We basically made sure that this cable is the way that it charges. Everything was charging too fast, basically. Everything is fast charge now, but this was charging too fast, and it was melting the boxes. Have a new cable which doesn't do that. And great, okay, yep, I put my serial number in. I asked for a new cable. It turned up today. Perfect, we can charge it back up. Great. But in the US, they had to recall it, and they're like, we have sold X amount, you know, and now please can you send them all back? That's a huge fucking cost to a company. And even then, they were like, you know, for your inconvenience, have £15 of credit towards the shop kind of thing as well. So it's not just the cost of that, it's you know, that kind of,
it's
they're trying to make good
damage as
on that sort of, absolutely.
Yeah, but which one's more dangerous, though, Ben? That or the trucks?
Definitely the trucks. The trucks. You know, if her Yoto suddenly melts, my house isn't going to catch on fire and everyone's, you know, there's an actual, you know, harm
trucks
to life.
Yeah, the trucks that just you're not going to, like, try and pop down to the shops and accidentally murder an entire family because
there's not a million boxes around the world that might suddenly set your house on fire. Yeah. But there are about 3,000 600 vehicles out there, which may
death
just
machines.
Luckily, a bunch of them broke down for other reasons, according to all the like report. Like, I like mildly been paying attention, like my social media, because I've like poked at these things.
Mm.
I get a bunch of these Cybertruck stories, but like, you know, where it's like, this thing failed, this thing failed. One guy, like, the door didn't quite open anymore, so he was, like, sealed in. Just, like, shit. Oh. Like
sealed into the death car.
Yeah, yeah.
Not he couldn't, not he couldn't
thing,
get in.
When
yeah.
you think
just
of the
inside.
Confluence of these, yeah. like, fuck-ups, because there's these, like, there's obviously no quality control, like, in the fact that they're not churning out a consistent product, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, you put the throttle down. And you're like, oh my god, we're not gonna stop. You're like, jump out.
Bail out.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't. Yeah. I can't. The door won't open.
Why double the wrong? Like, that's like your trigger getting stuck on your like R2 trigger getting stuck on your controller, and then your triangle button's like embedded into the controller.
Yeah.
It's like, can't do anything.
But you'd imagine that with a controller after years of use. Years of use that doesn't hurt anybody. Yeah. There's these big metal boxes, these awful fucking hideous boxes, just rolling around, fucking mowing people down because no one can get out.
It's fucking wild.
It sets on fire as well as it's driving along, and you can't get out, and the back's on fire.
And the audio book doesn't work. It's just like, oh, it's
and then it just suddenly starts. Absolutely, the problem is it then just like tunes into like an Elon Musk fucking, you know, radio station. It's just him chatting. It's just his Joe Rogan episode over and over and over again, or something like that. You're like, oh my god! And the windows are bulletproof, so you can't even smash the glass. Can't get out. Just whole mess of shit.
Oh, so I found the recall. Or an article, and so I was a bit wrong. The issue is that the accelerator pedal can dislodge from its pad if you hit the throttle too hard, and the broken section of the pedal can then get stuck under a piece of trim because they've not like designed as well and jam the throttle in the all on position. So basically, the pedal and pad dislodge, and then the loose piece will just jam into. A thing that it shouldn't be able to hook onto, and it'll force the throttle on. But get this.
Yeah.
So where I got mistaken was...
Rube Goldberg machine.
So the reason why it happened was because there was an unapproved change in manufacture introduced lubricant, bracket soap, to aid in the component assembly of the pad onto the accelerator pad, but the residual lubricant reduced the retention of the pad to the pedal. So someone was like, oh, I can't... It's hard to put part A on part B, so we'll just lube it up, but the problem is that lube stays, which means that then when you, like, jam on the pedal, you break the pedal, and the broken part forces the pedal to... That's insane!
Someone was just like, why is this not working?
And someone in manufacturing, probably under really terrible like labor like conditions, wasn't being able to like put pads and pedals together. And they're like, oh, let's just
gum.
It's like, oh, someone just said, let's lube it so you could do this quicker. And no one thought, what happens to the lube afterwards?
No one thought, let's write this down.
Fucking
to top it all off, that soap just tastes like coriander as well. So it's, you know, it's problems on problems.
Best tasting soap on the planet, then.
Yeah.
I agree.
To round out the episode, has anyone played any games this week? I don't imagine any of us actually have.
I didn't, but I did have another... I had, depending on our time, a couple of other topics we could touch. But
cool, we got 15 minutes. We got 15 minutes. Let's hit it. Let's hit another topic because I don't think any of us have games.
Okay, so I'm just going to read you the highlight of one, which is Professor Layton, CEO, expressed wants to make erotic and violent games one day.
What, the same genre? Like you want?
So this is where there's two articles. I just wanted to read you the headline and kind of riff on it. I don't actually care about the content, but like the CEO of the company who makes Professor Layton games just says, I think we should make erotic and violent games one day, and I want to know what you guys think of what that might mean.
I mean, Steam's full of them, isn't it? So, sure, crack on, mate. I mean, you know.
I just want to know if it's the same thing,
like, or is it different? I want to make violent and...
So this is what I want to know.
I had those as separate things.
No, this is why I wanted you guys to think about what are the ways to put these ideas together.
One is probably very illegal, and the other is
so this is Professor Layton snuff films edition, right?
Yeah, but like really bad ones, you know. Like,
wait, sorry. Do you think there are like, good snuff films? What do you? Sorry, Lucy. What are you?
No, but like really bad ones where it's going to be like I don't know, Professor Layton in it.
But like Professor Layton games are like what? Like they're adventure games, right? They're kind of like point and clicky puzzle
him as like
adventure
the
games.
Protagonist
right?
of your.
And so you he's thing. Like, oh mate, I've got to go in this door. This is where I think the item is. I need. He opens it, and there's just someone in a chair being fucking whipped or something. She's like, oh shit.
Well,
so it depends
on the timing. Like, so take the snuff film notion. Is it that Professor Layton like stumbles upon the act that could be recorded into a snuff film, or do you think he's trying to solve the mystery of a snuff film?
Oh, that would be interesting.
So he has to watch the snuff film for clues.
Wow.
And he's like, aha, that whip is only made by 3 manufacturers and only 2 stores in town sell one of them.
So it's like it's like Hostel, but Professor Layton is walking around the town trying to work out what's happened to the fucking backpackers. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking no.
I don't want to know.
Sorry, this is why I wanted to like explore the space without like bothering about what the context of that quote was.
But again, I mean, like if the CEO of that studio wants to make his own game and just go off and be like, cool, I've made a sexual game, fine. Mm-hmm. I've gone off and I've made a violent game, fine. Make those games. Live put them life. On Steam. Somewhere. Yeah. Don't combine those things. And don't combine those things with your existing properties.
I don't think
either.
That was ever
So
that was the Mr. Layton's name.
Yeah, that was the first weird headline. The other one is that Universal Epic Universe is releasing a Super Nintendo World. And I'm those are words I've said.
I need more context.
Yeah.
I don't
so,
that makes no sense
Epic,
to me.
Epic Universe is a theme park in Orlando.
Uh-huh.
And they're viewing a Super Nintendo World chunk of that place.
Hasn't that already happened?
Yeah, I thought that Universe already had Super Nintendo World or whatever.
Super Nintendo World it got announced May 2nd today.
Because they have one.
Maybe there's a Nintendo theme park.
Where is that? Is that in like?
I don't know.
Oh, so Donkey Kong themed land in Universal Studios Japan in 2021 and Hollywood 2023. That was just Donkey Kong themed. Yeah. This is Super Nintendo themed.
So there's Super Nintendo World in Japan.
Is there?
Yes. I assume maybe this is like, we're bringing it to the States kind of thing, potentially.
Oh, already in the States. I thought they had one in Japan and one in the States.
Oh, I mean, they might.
So I think that maybe it's that they had the Donkey Kong, but not the whole Super Nintendo in the States.
Yep. So
but
the,
I just
so
wanted
as,
to...
As part of that wanted, is Donkey Kong Country. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. What I America, it's Donkey Kong Country. what I wanted to ask you guys is like if you could pick an IP or kind of more interestingly a platform, because this is super like Nintendo, this isn't Super Mario, but like what platform would you want a theme park to be designed around? That's why I wanted to bring this up.
For me it's Super Nintendo Charmers and it's just all Simpsons themed around the entire place.
But, I mean, you could say Super Nintendo, but then tell me, like, we could talk about which part. Like, obviously, this is going
to
be, like,
I'd want
Nintendo
it to be,
IP.
Like,
but I'm thinking just
be,
platform, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely. I'd want it to be the most awkward one possible.
Dreamcast.
So the aesthetic around everywhere 3DO. Is just fucking. Yeah, absolutely.
So
it's like the Atari.
Fucking mind.
And it's just fucking shit.
So, Ben, My immediate thought was similar, and I came up with Virtua Boy, where the entire park was in red tones. Like they just built only red. And so the people who are visiting are wearing whatever the fuck colors, so it's this weird dissonance, right? Because you're not wearing Virtua Boy goggles, you're going to a theme park. Everything just looks like you're in Virtua Boy. But like Steve Dave and his 17 kids are wearing all kinds of clothes, right? So the park just doesn't work. You don't feel embedded in Virtua Boy, you feel like you're having a stroke.
Oh mate, absolutely, just like the Game Boy, and it's all in that weird fucking sepia green sort of tone. You're walking around, it's like, but the sky's blue.
Yeah.
Why is the sky
no,
blue?
No, they definitely put a dome over dome. It with a filter. A
I think I'd
just
do
a
it
big
like...
green filter dome.
I think I'd do it like early, like Xbox. And like
OG Xbox?
Xbox 360. Yeah, like that, where everything's just very muscly and brown and green and everything's
just
a
Marcus
war zone.
12 Marcus yeah. Felix has just fucking stomped
and
it
just
around.
Like guns everywhere. Just that.
And there's like they've got actors just doing like bits, mm-hmm. and it's a bunch of the Covenant just fighting, you know, all yeah. of the fucking people from the Marcus Fenix fucking game, you know, Gears of War, and it's like, oh, this doesn't happen in the game. Wow, you know, that merging of those kinds of things. Yeah,
you like walk up to a counter and then the floor drops by 3 feet because you've entered cover, so you can't look above. Until you push a button to leave cover.
And just mark it. Master Chief just looks over the counter like, what the fuck do you want?
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Like, how do you get in line in the queue for, like, a ride? You're carrying a little, like, gun and you have to shoot a target? Because everything is about random shooting.
Yeah. Just sample all the guns.
Mm.
Yeah. A lot of guns.
There is a Super Nintendo World in Universal Studios in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
so that's
Super
that
Nintendo
that's the
World.
One that
so
was built
article...
yeah, that was
makes sense.
That was a year that was a year ago that was built.
Was that the announcement roughly. Of it or was that the opening of
no.
it?
No. Come celebrate so I'm having a look at Universal Studios Hollywood. Come celebrate the 1 year anniversary of Super Nintendo World and level up your play today.
Weird.
So, yeah,
So
maybe it's going somewhere else potentially.
Well, so that was in Hollywood. This is in Orlando, but I guess this, yeah, this must have just been a poorly written article that it was Super Nintendo World now expanding to Orlando versus being new to the States.
Yeah, so having a look at something saying New Orlando Theme Park opening in 2025. Mm-hmm. A Super Nintendo one. So yeah, they're just expanding, yeah. I guess. As Universal kind of does, right? They have their parks and they bring different things kind of all around them, I suppose. So then that's easy to replicate across the parks, across the country, I guess. But yeah, it's when we get a really random, you know, Super Nintendo World like Dundee or something. And everyone's got to go to like the fucking outer reaches of Scotland to fucking go and hang out with Mario, and he's got a weird accent instead. Like, and it's like that, and it's exactly the same as that fucking Glasgow Willy Wonka fucking experience that everyone had like, several months ago. And it's just this really fucking weird compressed Mario.
Yes, they should just make an actual Mario world based on the original movie. That would be better. Yeah.
Okay, that would be
Dennis Hopper
of...
just walking around shouting at people. Like.
Yeah, so originally...
all these weird little headed Goombas just stood there in their big fucking things, just all lining up around the side.
Oh, the Fire Festival version of like Super Nintendo.
Absolutely. Yeah, can't leave. Right. The Goombas won't let you leave. Like, literally just make a wall around the space.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I'm glad we had headline roundup. That's good.
I just sometimes the headlines are more like what being dumb about dumb, poorly worded headlines is sometimes more fun than news.
Where was the Nintendo headline from? What
Ooh,
was
the
outlet
the tab,
run?
Dude. One sec. It was from... So one, there was a YouTube video called Introducing Super Nintendo World at Universal Epic Universe, and the first look was animationmagazine.net. It was linked in one of, like a gaming group somewhere.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, like I said, maybe they just...
AI-generated headline being an AI-generated headline.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not in my RSS feed.
Oh, man, I admit, if Google Reader still existed, I would have been so much more on top of all kinds of things. No RSS reader has been as good as it because it was simple and had sharing, but it wasn't like about making
Newsify
a social network.
Newsify is what I use. Sorry? That's pretty good. Newsify.
I might have to try because
It's good. It's decent. It's everything I
now that do. Like the social networks have just become abysmal at even pretending like they could give me the same thing as like tracking all the articles of a website via RSS feeds. I'm gonna go back. I think like it still might be shit, but at least I have some notion of what's coming through a place rather than algorithms deciding I don't need to know that like thing happened.
Sure.
I have pasted a name in our call, and you can check that out.
Perfect. As a to round out the episode, and as a bit of a public service broadcast, I had an email today that Google Podcasts is closing.
Yes. I knew that. Yeah, it's been on the way for a while.
Yeah, and everything is essentially just going straight to YouTube. Mm-hmm. Now, they're pushing everything over to YouTube. A couple of months ago, I was able to set our... basically, anytime I upload a Tanked Up podcast, we can assign it to be on the Tanked Up podcast now. So the Tanked Up podcast feed is within YouTube.
Yes, there's a YouTube...
And I guess... And as Google does, you know, this podcast thing is now redundant. We have folded it into another service. You know, like YouTube is, after Google, is like the second biggest search engine in the world, right?
Yeah.
So, fuck any other service that we pay for. Let's just get rid of it. Again, I can't remember what service it was, but there was a Google-based element, and they'd voted to unionize, and then they got rid of several people, so the union took Google to court or took them to a congressional hearing, and then Google just closed the entire fucking unit.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, they fired some, or they tried to fire some people, but it wasn't really kosher because they had unionized, and so the solution was, well, we just, the whole
just
unit's not viable, so like those people aren't getting their jobs back.
Scorched earth.
Theory. Again,
yeah. How dare you try? How dare you try and get some kind of justice or recompense for these people?
Fucking laws of the land that are so skewed in their fucking favor anyway.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And people would have seen that video.
I noticed that YouTube, if you go to a YouTube channel, they now have so many tabs, filters. Right, there's like your For You page, which is because of TikTok.
Yep. Yep.
And then there's videos, which is like, thankfully, the still chronological feed. And then there's playlists, which is good for out of lives, because although almost every video we put up now is a Tanked Up thing, occasionally we do other things, and that's a filter. Mm-hmm. But now they have a podcasts flag. And so like now you can have the various podcasts be separate from the playlists and videos. But of course, most people who were putting out podcasts had them on a playlist. And so there's this weird thing you have to navigate, but it's actually kind of useful, and it's interesting because some of the channels I've subscribed to, they're not podcasts, but they're like a serial release, and so they've put that under the podcast banner, but it's not like, but these are the same, these same like sites have podcasts like things they put out on your podcatchers, but they've also got other things that like it's useful to think of on YouTube as a thing that's coming out cyclically. So those are in the website as podcasts, but like a bunch of those aren't going to show up on their podcast feeds, if that makes sense. So it's this really interesting interplay of why YouTube just like making a new column. People are kind of redefining what counts as a podcast just because of what people use YouTube for.
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, I've just gone to YouTube Music. I didn't know this was here.
Oh, that's been... YouTube Music is better quality than Spotify, apparently, question mark, says some people. But mostly, if you get YouTube Premium, you get YouTube Music, and you get ad-free YouTube.
Oh, because I got YouTube Premium. Broke me in half. And it's just a way better way to live. It's sad, but I don't pay for like Netflix or anything like that. I was like, well, what do I use and watch the most? And it's YouTube. And just not having, because like Adblocker, God bless its soul, was it wasn't standing up to.
Yeah, once Google started fighting ad blockers, it became... So basically, there's a few years where I literally didn't realize YouTube had ads anymore because I had been using a decent ad blocker for so long.
Yeah,
It didn't. So when YouTube Premium came out and people were like, oh, yeah, I just pay for premium. Like, I don't understand why you would do that. It's like a higher bit. Like, I just didn't click. And then they started their war on ad blockers. So I'm like, oh, this is kind of untenable. Your ads suck.
Yeah,
it's no really longer bad. Planned ad breaks. You're just like sprinkling them in the middle of someone's sentence.
In the middle, and it's like sometimes it's like live sometimes streams it's not. As well.
Yeah,
and it's like, what is this? But I watch a lot of my YouTube, probably maybe 70% on my Xbox, and can't get ad blocker on there. And it's like
same with mobile. I think this is why the Gen Z kids all buy premium
but it's a sad
watching it on phones and shit like that where you can't quite get into the
and I've even tried stuff where it's like you can fast forward through the adverts like on other things that I have access to, like got BT or whatever that turned into Discovery Plus to watch the football, and it's like, oh, you watch that on your computer and the ads pop up within that, and it's like ad blocker doesn't work on that. So I downloaded, what's the name of it,
a better
video
ad blocker.
Video speed controller, and I can press 5 times the speed on the ad, so I still have to unfortunately
see some of the ad, but not a lot, as much.
Yes,
you see 20% of the ad.
I haven't really known how fast it goes. Maybe it goes to like 8 times speed. Yeah. It's just that by the time of the 5 times speed goes, it's like, oh, the program's dying again. Let me slow this down. But it sucks. Ads suck. I don't buy any of the crap. If ads worked on me in particular, I should be exempt. Just me. They seldom work on me because, you know. I don't buy the crap that you're... Because I don't get the targeted ads.
But it's,
I'm sure if they were targeted, I would buy...
It's an interesting kind of place, because just going on podcasts on YouTube, you know, live now, there's currently 27,000 people watching Lo-Fi Hip-Hop Radio.
You know, that's good stuff.
10,000 people watching live Trump on Trial from something called Midas Touch. It isn't quite Midas Touch, is it, you twat? almost 4,000 people watching various podcasts. You know, there's a lot of people on YouTube watching live shows. And whether that's being delivered on their phones and you have control on the ads, at least with Twitch, you have a little bit of control kind of on ads those sorts of things. I don't know.
Once you're a big
with...
Twitch person, I think I'll. Because you need to serve certain ads per hour, people just basically it was just easier once they made it so that it would automatically run ads to just like let it happen. And the problem with that is, it won't push a viewer. So like if you say don't like only push an ad every 20 minutes or whatever, it views because the technology has the granularity. It views each viewer as what's their 20-minute window. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, so if you don't concertedly push ads every 20 minutes to try and, like, head that off at the pass, it means it'll, like, randomly serve... Ben started watching me at 5 minutes in, so 25 minutes in, it'll serve him an ad. But Lucy was there 2 minutes before the broadcast started, but I, like, had a splash screen, because that's how most people do. So she's getting that ad 2 minutes before, or 7 minutes before Ben. And I like started watching just when the broadcast started. Mm-hmm. And so now the three of us are losing three different minutes.
Yeah. And it's like, I can't even just look in what the video is and sample what I'm watching before you... I have to
The fact that
ad.
It's like, sort of an ad like, before no, you I can see the content. Yeah.
I don't use Twitch at all now.
Yeah.
No, I don't. No. I don't either at all. Interesting. Maybe a bigger discussion on these kinds of places. But let's finish there for this week. And does anyone want to mention their beer at all or say anything additional about
it? It was the same all the way through in a really good way. Consistency. Cool. And exactly the type of beer I want, consistency.
Nice.
Same. Consistent. Mm-hmm. Went all the way down to the end. Just really good. Just really satiating despite it only being 4.6%. And yeah, I'll try and save the Belgian wit till next week. And,
nice. Yeah. Cool. For me, this atom, the neutron star, it did mellow a little bit. So that bit of alcohol burn that I was getting did start to drop.
Mm.
The more I drank the beer. So, it's difficult. I had a couple of beers before the dinner as well. So, suddenly a 12% beer is just like, what happened an hour ago? I don't fucking know. How can I remember a beer? How can I remember how it tasted an hour ago? Mm. But I think that it's mellowed very slightly. And yeah, that alcohol burn has gone a little bit. And the vanilla just stays a touch longer as well, so that the vanilla kind of gives it or runs through the beer, at least kind of after maybe the first third or something like that. The vanilla runs through that a little bit more, so that alcohol burn doesn't quite hit the bitterness the same way at the end of that. And it being that touch sweeter as well, with the vanilla running all the way through, it almost, it's edging on like Captain Morgan's with a little bit of kind of like Diet Coke or something in there. So it's got that sweetness to it. That vanilla is quite a big element of that flavor now. And the bitterness has dropped very slightly. So that cold, bitter, burnt coffee I was getting at the end has mellowed and has sweetened very slightly. So the end of this beer isn't quite as bad as it was for the first kind of, you know, for that initial sort of taste. So it's got better. And I would think that as a 12% kind of imperial, it's one of those beers, if you're sharing it with someone, you're going to drink it within like 20 minutes and you'll probably only experience that initial flavor profile. Your palate won't have enough time to acclimatize and deal with the flavors that are going on. Whereas if you have a can by yourself, absolutely towards the end, you're going to start to get that much, much nicer and much more blended flavor to it. And it, you know, I drank this, it was not straight out of the fridge, but it had been out for, you know, maybe 20 minutes or something like that before I drank it. So it was maybe 8 degrees or something like that. So a little warmer, but it's probably better, slightly warmer than that as well, maybe more towards that 10 or 12 degrees. You know, that's maybe the temperature you want to be drinking this beer at. So yes, that's the beers. That's no games, actually. That's all of the news that we want to talk about this week. If you want to talk to us, we are at Tanked Up Cast on the socials. We are on YouTube, as we've talked about, and the podcast goes up every time, every episode, for episodes that we're all together, episodes that are coming up where Adol has an impromptu hangout with Ben from the Hop Knocker, the times that we are potentially going to get sort of more guests on and things like that as well. You can go to adolives.net as well to see our faces, because it pulls from those YouTube videos to see our faces and the beers that we have been drinking, or go to a podcast service of choice, which is no longer Google Podcasts, but is maybe something else instead, depending on the platform that you use. It seems to be getting, again, like the gaming sphere, slightly more consolidated into one or two. I mean, podcasts have always been dominated by iTunes, right? No one uses iTunes anymore, and it's either Spotify or it's now probably YouTube, or maybe an outlier, Podbean, something else that people might still use from 15 years ago, you know, that still, by some hope and prayer, exists in its own space. You can get us individually on the socials. I'm at Nova_47. Lucy is
JuicyLoose9.
And Adel is
at the Omniarch.
And that's everything for us this week. Thank you very much for joining us. We've been tagged up, and we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Down with capitalism. And homework.
Yeah, no homework means less marking. I'm on board. Bye. www.outoflives.net